All right, we ready to go?
Ready.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Thursday, July 13th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Welcome, everybody. Could you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. And please read the first item.
Item 811. Recommend the Portland Bureau of Transportation develop new and expanded strategies to improve transit service and increase transit ridership throughout the city by developing an enhanced transit program and endorse a list of transit projects for the Regional Transportation Plan 2018 update. Call for projects.
Commissioner Saltz.
Thank you, Mayor. Today we're going to hear from staff and our partner TriMet about proposed projects that will create safe streets and improve transit in our city. Item 811 is a resolution that gives the Bureau of Transportation the authority to add proposed enhanced transit projects to the transportation system plan, and we'll learn much more about that shortly from the staff. Item 812 is a resolution that amends the Vision Zero Action Plan to add a list of proposed projects to the transportation system plan. Both resolutions will allow PBOT to submit the project list to Metro's Regional Transportation Plan, and the timing is certainly excellent as the state legislature passed a transportation package last week that will help immensely with these projects. I want to especially thank Neil McFarlane and our team at the city, especially Elizabeth Edwards, for all, and Director Treat and other PBOT staff for all their work on that successful transportation package. A significant number of streets in the high crash network are in areas where high numbers of low-income families, people of color, and people with low English proficiency live, work, and go to school. Making our streets safer for all, particularly for these groups, is fundamental to succeeding as a city. Equally important is to make these corridors attractive and effective for fast, reliable, convenient transit. This is the focus of the Enhanced Transit Program and Vision Zero. Transportation Director Leah Treat, TriMet General Manager Neil McFarlane, and Senior Planner Art Pierce will kick it off for us.
While they're coming up, Commissioner, could I have the clerk also read item 812?
812, amend the City Vision Zero Action Plan, Saving Lives with Safe Streets, to incorporate the Vision Zero project list.
Thank you.
Great. Hi, Mayor, Commissioners. Leah Treat, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. We're really happy to be here today to talk to you about some of our most innovative and important projects that we're working on at PBOT. Vision Zero, which you all are very well familiar with and have been incredibly supportive of. But the other is a new concept, and it's called Enhanced Transit Corridors, and that is informing the update of the region's transit vision for the next 20 years. Our staff has been working closely together to improve safety and make transit more attractive, and we've been working very closely with our partners at TriMet and Portland Streetcar to come up with strong regional transit vision that meets our comprehensive plan goals as well as the region's goals. We thank our transit partners and Neil McFarlane and Dan Bauer for being with us here today. So before we decide and dive into the specifics of the resolutions, there are two main reasons why we're bringing the items to you today in a joint presentation. One is that our recently adopted comprehensive plan lays out a clear Vision Zero and transit goals that mutually support each other. The other is that safe streets and a robust transit system need each other, and they are fundamentally linked. As you all are well aware, Vision Zero aims to eliminate all deaths and serious injuries on our streets by 2025. Many of our high crash network streets also happen to be key transit corridors and areas for neighbors to stop, shop, and get together. We're talking about extremely important corridors with multiple mobility demands. Many of these streets will attract much of the city's growth, so it is really imperative that they are safe, that they are attractive to all users, and they're very well serviced by transit. Only then can they be the places where Portlanders come together to meet, to shop, and to recreate. These streets and corridors in many ways are the test of whether we as a city can meet our goals for prioritizing walking, cycling, and transit, and to make safety and equity key principles guiding our actions. Regarding equity, as you'll see in a moment, a significant number of corridors lie in areas where high numbers of low-income families, people of color, and people with low English proficiency live. They work there, and they also go to school there. So making our streets safer for all of them, particularly these groups, is fundamental to us succeeding as a city. And just as important is to make these corridors work for fast, reliable, convenient, and attractive transit, particularly for the many Portlanders who rely on transit to travel long distances to and from work and school. So as I stated earlier, our safety, transit, and equity strategies go hand in hand. Fast, reliable, and attractive transit supports walkable communities and compact development. Similarly, safe streets make walking and cycling to transit possible for all Portlanders. I'll now hand it over to Neil McFarlane.
Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. And by my presence here, I think I want to try to mostly indicate the great partnership that we have had historically with the City of Portland. We have inherited an enviable transit system, but it's largely because of the partnerships that have really allowed some really great things to happen. We now know that we need to grow that transit system, and we need to improve it. We need to make it keep up with the demands of growth and, frankly, the challenges of the congestion that is that follows that growth. And that's why I'm excited about being here today to share and join in the conversation about enhanced transit and some of the other concepts that we have outlined for the future. I did want to take a moment just to share some of the other initiatives that TriMet has underway right now, many of which you know about. First of all, we have developed, with a very robust process over the last few years, a series of service enhancement plans for all sectors of our region. And those have really become a roadmap, if you will, for the development of service over a period of time. We were very pleased that a couple of years ago, our board of directors implemented a payroll tax increment that increments over 10 years, and that has been allowing us for the first couple of years to see bus service improvements in many areas, 3-4%, which is really a very good percentage of growth. But I'd also note that with the adoption of the transportation package that Commissioner Saltzman noted, we have the chance for a jump start in some of this. And I would just note that we have made some commitments associated with that package. The first one that we are beginning to work on as we speak is a low-income fare that will actually provide, and there's a great outline of this with a Metro Task Force that that has been established and will continue to work with this group of nonprofit providers and people who serve disadvantaged portions of our community. But the goal is really a 50% discount on all prices from the adult fares, same discount we offer seniors and people with disability and students, to people who are within 200% of federal poverty level. So, again, really important program. We're anxious to get that underway. But then we also have residual funds that will allow us to begin to improve service. We have some time to do some planning. We actually won't be receiving those funds until probably in terms of cash until something like January of 2019, provided the governor signs the bill, which I'm sure she will. So we'll be working with your staff in terms of prioritizing the expenditure of those funds together with all of our other constituents in the region. And we're really looking forward to that. Needless to say, there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of back-of-the-house work that needs to be done, things like buying buses, hiring operators and mechanics, and all the other things. But the emphasis of this service is to serve areas that have concentrations of low-income families, connections to jobs, all kinds of very important goals that I know are deeply reflected in city policy in many, many places. I'd also just note that we're working very closely with the city to advance our next high-capacity projects. We're working on the Division Transit Project and actually are out with a great deal of outreach on sort of refined designs as we speak. And our goal is to submit that project to the Federal Transit Administration for rating later this summer. and hopefully we'll be in the position to implement that over the next few years. Our goal for that is actually to open for service in 2021. And similarly, we're working on a draft environmental impact statement. Metro's actually the lead for this for the Southwest Corridor. It would serve our Barber I-5 corridor, which is the largest travel corridor, which is not served with high-capacity transit in the region right now. So we're excited about that and appreciate the city's continued support on all of that. And we're also engaged with our partners at the Portland City Department of Transportation, but also Portland Streetcar, related to potential service improvements there as well. But you'll hear a lot more from Art and April about the concept of enhanced transit, and this is really an important concept to us because we know that we will continue to serve the majority of our customers on a bus system. And our bus system, as you'll see in this presentation, has been subject to substantially more and more delay, and it's been harder and harder for us to keep our buses on schedule, to keep our intervals where they need to be. And we'd love to be able to invest in corridors first that have a better sense of reliability and can provide a better sense of reliability to our customers. And I think combining the work that will be outlined to you with our improved service is really the model forward. We've proved that most recently on the 122nd corridor, where PBOT has been active in making a number of sidewalk pedestrian safe crossing improvements, and we've been stepping up service along the while. And 122nd, we'll look forward to becoming a full frequent service line here before you know. I would also just note that we are looking to expand other tools to make transit effective, and we're on the brink of actually sort of a big public announcement, if you will, for the Hop Fast Pass new fare system. And we're pleased to partner with Portland Streetcar on that, as well as C-Tran, and we think that will offer a great number of advantages to our customers. But we're also continuing on some of the other smart city initiatives that we were partnered with in terms of our application to DOT some time ago. That's different ways to get infrastructure to work better with our service. Those are really important initiatives that we're continuing to put a lot of energy into. And we're also preparing to launch our first series of electric buses. So in 2018, middle of the year, next year, we'll receive 5 electric buses that we'll begin to learn about. And I know there's a great deal of interest in that in the community. I personally believe that electric is the fuel of the future for transit. However, I'd also note that there's an enormous amount of organizational and other change that's required to really make electric technology work well. So this will be a great opportunity for us to begin to learn about that. Let me just close by once again just reiterating how much I value the partnership with the city. Literally nothing dramatic or good happens in this region without the city's related transit. How happens without the city support. And be happy to be around as you approach the question and answer period as well.
Great. Art? All right. Thank you. So again, Art Pierce. I manage transportation planning and capital program for the City of Portland, as well as the Active Transportation and Safety Division. And so we brought together for you today essentially two topics that were being thought of separately as two separate council items, and then realized that they were really appropriate conversations to bring together as one. And so the specifics of what we're looking for today, we're looking for specific adoption around the Vision Zero work, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that, as well as essentially a midpoint briefing on where we are with the regional transit vision and with enhanced transit corridors. And we'll be looking for your endorsement of that proposed set of lists for the regional transportation plan. One of the reasons why we're bringing this together is 14 of the 30 high crash corridors are also enhanced transit corridors, so they will need both investments focused on safety and access to transit, as well as improvements that will support transit. And also really focusing in, we are at a stage right now in terms of the process in which we have adopted a transportation system plan, and we're now heading through into a coordination of those plans at the regional level. And it's very important for us to bring the latest thinking, particularly around transit and Vision Zero, into that regional process as well as into the next transportation system plan. So it's very timely and very important that we have this conversation with you so we can bring appropriate and updated information at the regional transit conversation. So in terms of what one sort of piece of background, I think some of you were here for the transportation system plan, but some of you are new. The transportation system plan includes a whole array of investments, and investments that are small, less than $500,000. These would be crossings or new lights, for instance, as well as projects that are more in the $500,000 level or more, and all the way up to, you know, many millions of dollars. Specifically, what we're trying to make sure that we have updated for this specific conversation are those that we want to make eligible in the regional transportation plan that might be eligible for federal funding or competing at the regional and state level for resources. And so that's why it's very timely today. So the first group of folks that we're going to bring up for you today is Margie Bradway and Clay Vaca, and they're going to give you an update on the Vision Zero, unless there's questions for these two.
No, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. It's good seeing you, Neil.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'll move over so she can go.
Oh, thanks.
And I just want to remind people that if there's anybody here waiting for item 813 has been pulled back to my office, so there will not be a presentation on item 813 today. Sorry.
That's okay. Hi, my name is Margie Bradway. I'm the Active Transportation Safety Division Manager, and I'm going to keep this part of the presentation brief. It seems like I'm getting an echo in my microphone. Is that, am I okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So
Black Lives Matter.
Mimi, you are
hide that bill, man. We know it's coming.
Should I proceed, sir? Yes. Okay.
Wait one sec, because I actually want to hear what you have to say.
It would lose today, wouldn't it?
You
need to give those cops all
excuse me, you are in violation of council rules. And if you continue, you will be asked to leave. And if you don't leave, you're subject to arrest for trespassing.
How dare you?
I don't know how to tell me to do that. The coward. Hey, by the way, they dropped the charges, you punk. You know what a punk is? A coward.
Mr. Walsh, you've been asked to leave. Please do so. Thank you. Well, that was interesting.
No, okay, let's start. Okay, let's start over. So this piece of the presentation is focused on Vision Zero. We are here today to amend this particular resolution, amends the Vision Zero Action Plan, and adds a project list to that plan, and as well as directing PBOT, as Art mentioned, to amend the TSP, the Transportation System Plan, and the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan. Next slide. I'll pause for a minute. Okay. So just to remind us all, you're familiar with the concept of Vision Zero, but the vision statement that was adopted by the 26-person task force is really important because it sets the criteria that we use in identifying all the projects. So the goal is working together, we will take equitable and data-driven actions that will eliminate deaths and serious injuries for all who share Portland streets by 2025. That means that we use really only two criteria in identifying projects. One are the crashes, fatalities and serious injuries, and two, equity data. Also, as a reminder, the 26-member task force, Vision Zero Task Force, adopted the High Crash Network, and then subsequently they have also directed PBOT to endorse this project list before you. And this city council in particular has had a huge amount of support for Vision Zero. As you can see in the slide above you, you may remember Commissioner Sulzman when we came before this council in 2015 to adopt a Vision Zero resolution. We then came back with a full plan. in 2016, which outlined 32 action items. One of those action items was to invest in the high crash corridor. And while we have been going forward with our plan, we've also been investing in projects such as Outer Halsey, which was funded by this at our city council, but the investment in those projects have been piecemeal. So what we're doing today is bringing you a complete comprehensive list of projects, both funded and not funded, some large projects and some small projects, which Clay is going to explain.
Good afternoon. Clay Vaca, project manager for Vision Zero with the City of Portland. As Margie mentioned, Vision Zero identifies Portland's 30 most dangerous streets and 30 most dangerous intersections. Together, they make up Portland's high crash network. These are streets that make up only 8% of Portland's street network and yet account for 57% of deadly crashes on Portland streets. And in fact, the first week of July was pretty horrific and troubling. 7 people lost their lives on Portland streets, averaging 1 person a day. Additionally, there was a very serious bike injury. 7 out of those 8 crashes occurred on one of these 30 streets. This network provides a data-driven, focused way to invest designing safety in our most dangerous streets, with a particular priority on segments that overlap with sections shaded in gray, which show the equity areas referred to as community of concern in Portland. Vision Zero is multimodal in nature. Vision Zero commits to eliminating traffic fatalities for all people moving on Portland streets by all modes. This graphic shows that people walking are overrepresented in traffic fatalities on Portland streets. While about 9% of Portlanders identify walking as their primary mode of getting around, 31% of people killed on Portland streets are walking. Recognizing kind of in converse, recognizing that there are personal safety concerns in using transit from a traffic safety perspective, transit is an impressively safe choice. This graphic shows that while 7% of Portlanders identify using transit as their primary mode of moving about Portland, no people died in a traffic collision while on transit in the 10-year period that we analyzed. This further highlights the overlap of the two programs before you today. We need to make it safe for people to get to transit and invest in making transit a competitive and attractive travel option. Street design contributes significantly to how people behave and interact on the street, as well as to how severe the outcome of a traffic crash is. On wide multi-lane streets, people often feel comfortable driving fast, and they have a hard time seeing the complete street network. The tunnel vision occurs, and it's hard to see what's happening on the periphery, often where people walking and biking are moving. We know that the faster the speed, the more likely the crash is to result in death or serious injury. Two design tenets of Vision Zero: to either set speeds that are safe for all users who are mixing on the streets, or on streets with higher speeds, to separate people who are traveling with different modes. The Vision Zero Task Force, the body of community and agency leaders that came together to develop the Vision Zero Action Plan, was clear that Portland's Vision Zero work should prioritize street design. We know that we can redesign streets so that when someone makes a mistake, it does not result in death or serious injury. The center median in this design provides safe left-turning movements for people driving and a refuge for people walking across the street. People biking are provided with space from moving vehicles, and slower speeds are achieved through street design, education, and enforcement. Redesigning streets in this way is a top priority for Vision Zero. The first of the 32 actions in the Vision Zero Action Plan that Margie mentioned is street design number 1, to fund and build capital safety improvements on the high crash network. In order to implement that first action, we needed to step back and take inventory of what is already on the high crash network. With 30 long stretches of street across the city, we needed to develop a complete picture of what work already had been done and planned on each segment, on each corridor, and to see where the gaps were, where no projects had yet been planned or built or identified, but where we knew that there was safety investment that was needed. The goal of this big picture look was to ensure that every segment of the high crash network was analyzed and accounted for with a project to help achieve the Vision Zero goal. So with that in mind, we took this high crash network that we've seen, these 30 streets, and the first question we asked is, on the high crash network, where are there existing and planned projects? So on that map, we drew a green line where projects have already been built. We drew a gray line where projects are funded and should achieve significant safety investments that change the character of the street, such as outer division that Neil McFarlane referred to. And then we drew orange lines where comprehensive safety projects have already been identified in the transportation system plan. So this is kind of the map that says, all right, we've either got something built, funded, or coming, or proposed. You may note that there's a gray polygon drawn around the central city that represents the boundaries of the central city multimodal safety project, which is a funded project whose planning process is just kicking off now. The project may fund safety improvements on the segments of the high crash network within its boundaries, because a potential funding opportunity within this area, those segments are identified in the funded section of the Vision Zero project list that's in front of you. The next question we asked is, on the high crash network, where should new projects be added, or where should existing projects in the TSP be changed, either grown in description or in geography? So then we drew a solid red line where projects already existed in the TSP but needed to be expanded, either in length or in scope. We drew a dotted red line where there were no identified projects, but where there should be. And those would be proposed projects that would be more than that $500,000 level that, is that correct? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. that is required in order to be a project in the TSP. And then we drew yellow lines on areas where smaller improvements under $500,000 could be appropriate to achieve the safety gains needed. And those would be considered part of the Transportation System Plan safety program. And so not a specific project called out independently in the TSP. So adding these two maps together, we see kind of what is funded and planned and what's newly proposed or revised. We have a complete project map that covers the entire high crash network, each segment of all of the 30 streets on that network. This map provides a high-level visual of the investments and projects needed to significantly address safety on the network. And this map correlates with the Vision Zero project list that is in front of you. Each line on the map is listed as a single project on this list, Exhibit A. The first block of projects, the red block, includes all of the new projects that are recommended to be added or revised in the TSP. So those red solid and dashed lines that you just reviewed. There are 17 new or revised TSP projects out of a total of 107 in the complete list. Included in the block of orange projects are all of the safety projects that exist today in the current TSP. There are 54. So it's important to note that Portland has recognized and been planning for multimodal safety needs on many of our most dangerous streets for some time. This exercise has helped us to identify and fill the gaps with 17 new and revised projects. The Vision Zero Task Force They have been integral in helping to kind of move Vision Zero forward to first create the Vision Zero action plan. And at our last meeting with them in June, we brought this list, and they unanimously motioned to move this list forward to City Council for consideration. The task force recognizes that in order to realize significant investment in the high crash network and to move aggressively toward Vision Zero, that we need to ensure that projects are identified and integrated into both the local and regional planning processes. So again, to wrap up, today we're asking to amend the Vision Zero Action Plan in order to incorporate the Vision Zero project list, and then to integrate select projects from that list into the transportation system plan and move them forward into the regional transportation plan process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions on the first part of the show on Vision Zero? No?
Okay. I'll just add to the record that Commissioner Fritz articulated that she would like to be here today to talk about how the marijuana tax is going to be funded. For Vision Zero, how it's going to be programmed, and we told her we'll come back in the fall while she's here and talk more about how that funding is going to be spent.
Great, thank you. All right, so we're going to switch now to focused on transit and enhanced transit. So I'm going to ask Mauricio Leclerc and April Bernalson to come up.
Thank you.
I believe our actually the next is you.
Yeah, so it starts with me. I'll start.
Yeah.
Okay. So the second part of our show is pivoting to talking about transit and the importance of transit itself in terms of the potential for it to help serve our growing region. So let's go next slide, perhaps. So just a reminder around the full spectrum of transit. When we talk about transit improvements, there's a lot of different potential outcomes that might be embedded in that. There's local bus service, sort of at the lower end of the spectrum, that's serving short trips, on and off trips, and then a spectrum going all the way up to high capacity transit, the MAX lines of our system, or even a future subway lines, those kind of things. What we've been emphasizing in recent work that for PBOT is this specific middle of the transit. We've been talking about it being the missing middle of transit, similar to the missing middle of housing. How do we make sure that we're really stressing the importance of the workhorses of our system that are those transit lines? As Neil referenced already, a lot of the partnerships in the last couple of years with TriMet has been working on the service enhancement plan process, which is very specifically focusing in on smaller level service investments, the investments in new lines, and bringing lines up to frequent service. And that lays a great foundation for the conversation that we've started initiating around enhanced transit. One of the specific sub-areas that we've given particular attention to has been around the east end of Portland, in particular focused on north-south service along some major corridors, as well as connections between housing and jobs in that area. And there's a number of additional service proposals that are embedded in that process. As we move towards the regional transit plan, we are working in partnership with Metro and TriMet and Portland Streetcar on making sure that we are implementing a system of planning and implementation in partnership to make sure these lines will be effective in serving our growth. Next. All of this is embedded in the Regional 2040 Growth Vision, which is we have a map referenced here, which will see a series of major high-capacity transit corridors being the primary organizing principles around how we're going to emphasize our growth within the region as well as within Portland. You'll see some key centers such as downtown or Gateway referenced here. Through the update of the comprehensive plan and the transportation system plan, Portland identified a whole number of additional centers and neighborhood centers and important corridors that are central to our growth strategy and to creating the future Portland that we want to see happen. One of the key realizations in that is the importance of bus service in particular in serving the daily activities of those specific locations, and the importance of specific attention by the city, not just by TriMet, in making sure that bus service can be effective. That a lot of the decisions around the service, in addition to adding the buses, are actually those in terms of priorities within the right-of-way, and that's a very specific task of the local jurisdictions to make those choices. What you see here is the current map of the regional transit plan, and you'll see that it primarily is emphasizing those major transit, high-capacity transit lines. What we are now proposing is to add a whole additional granularity to that system that shows how this bus service will be integral to providing that service. We gave you specific maps, I think, of these as handouts as well.
Could you go back to the last
sure.
slide? I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow that last statement. You
so
said
this,
you're going
so,
to a whole new level of granularity, and I don't understand what that means.
You bet. So what you'll see here is the mostly what's stressed here are bus rapid transit or light rail transit lines being proposed and the focus of regional investment.
Right.
We're coming to realize and believe that the existing frequent service network and other bus lines also deserve this level of regional and, in fact, federal priority. And so we're pressing for this additional set of lines that are, I guess, coming between those major corridors you see there.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I can't quite read the legend. Can you what's the difference between red, yellow, and green on this?
Oh, sure. Oh,
they were... As Art mentioned, they were potential light rail lines or BRT. The colors represented priorities, you know, first tier, second tier of implementation, and Southwest Corridor is a good example of one that was in the earlier state of implementation.
Okay.
So the next map is essentially a proposal coming from Portland to the region and to the regional process. Around how we might prioritize our emphasis in transit investment for the next 20 plus years. And so you'll see some key highlights of this map, and this is the specific handouts that we gave you as well. Some of the key highlights of that, on the regional high-capacity transit network, a lot of the emphasis is going to be on extending the MAX system farther out into the suburbs, in addition to Southwest Corridor. But then a lot of investment specifically in a whole series of those enhanced transit corridors, those bus corridors. And April's going to talk a little bit more what those might look like in a minute. But those include places like 122nd or 82nd, streets like Sandy or MLK. And those are all a bunch of areas where we're seeing very rapid growth and very continued demand for transit, but also we're seeing them being caught in congestion. And April will talk us a little bit more about that. Maybe next slide. Of course, we won't be able to do all of those lines at once, and so one of the key parts of the process is deciding where to put our energy first. And so the second map shows a proposal for where we might emphasize our attention in years 1 through 10, years 11 through 20, and sort of long-term in the strategic perspective outside of our current 20-year planning horizon. Any questions so far? On we're bringing a lot to you in terms of number of lines here all at once. Why don't I have? Okay, I think we should pass it. Keep moving forward. Yeah. One of the key questions that came up, and certainly it came up as we presented this presentation to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, is how does Portland Streetcar, how does the streetcar system fit within this this overall vision? One of the key pieces to make sure that we're all aware of today is the amount of work that the existing streetcar system, the existing loop that we have, both the NS line and the A and B lines, are doing already. We have about 16,000 riders each day. And a significant number of operations occurring each day. And all of those lines are at 15-minute frequency, but I think we're quickly learning that we're going to need to step those lines up in this step up the specific service of those lines to keep pace. One of the misconceptions around streetcar is about who rides it, so we thought it was important to reiterate this. 66% of streetcar riders are originating from home. So these are people who live in the neighborhood specifically surrounding streetcar. They're using streetcar to access daily shopping, work, school, specific for their daily needs. One of the other important facts is that one-third of all affordable housing within Portland is located within the catchment area of streetcar lines. So it's very, very important to people who need transit service very specifically. One of the other interesting pieces is that as we are expanding service, we are seeing growth responding in a correlated pattern surrounding streetcars. So streetcar investment is occurring, growth is happening around it, and ridership is occurring essentially on a unit-by-unit basis as new development happens around streetcar, showing the significance of it for their people's daily needs as they're moving into the urban neighborhoods. One of the issues that we see coming in the near term is specific to streetcar vehicles. And so you'll see here that as we're moving towards 2020, we're realizing that our now aging streetcar system, we're going to need to be refurbishing or retiring existing streetcars and need to be bringing new streetcars online. So it's we're starting to become a mature transit agency as the city of Portland, which is a new phenomenon for us for sure. I think I'll pass the... Oh, and so in terms of near-term investments, Portland Streetcar has done an extensive process of working with neighbors and constituents as well as with the Portland Streetcar Board and has really focused their near-term investment strategies in extending the streetcar system to Montgomery Park as well as to Hollywood along Broadway and Widener. So that's the near-term focus for the specifics of streetcar. And we at the city are considering streetcar as one of the components of the enhanced transit strategy, a specific vehicle type for a priority corridor. I think I'll pass it on to April to talk a little bit more about enhanced transit corridors and what we mean by that.
Hello, thank you. So given this is something new that we've been talking about in the city and in the region, I thought I would start by introducing what is enhanced transit corridors to give you a better picture. Some of the characteristics of enhanced transit include increasing the capacity, reliability, and transit travel speed of transit lines, and doing that through moderate capital and operational investments. And they can be flexible or context sensitive so that we can shape them to the places where it is most needed and within the constraints of the built environment or with acceptable modifications. And they can be deployed relatively quickly compared to high-capacity transit. And they could come in different forms. This could be addressing some hotspots that perhaps address one line or multiple lines for benefit. It could be a series of investments in a corridor that's just a part of a line or multiple lines. Or it could be a full upgrade, an upgrade of a full line from end to end. And so it really can take different forms. And it also can include bus and streetcar. We consider both to be in the family of enhanced transit. And in addition, to help further define what is enhanced transit, we have developed a toolbox of operational and capital treatments that we can also use to deploy on transit lines. The symbols along the bottom of the slide represent some of those tools in our toolbox, and there's about 20 of them that our consultant through our TGM grant, Transportation and Growth Management Grant, we have a consultant team with CH2M and HDR helping us develop this plan. And I wanted to give you just a sampler of some of the tools in that toolbox, and certainly happy to share the full toolbox with you. It's also on our project website. And the, I would say, premier tool would be dedicated transit lanes, and where only transit is allowed to travel in that lane. We do have examples of this, and actually several of the tools I can share. We have examples of them already in our transit system, including some of on some of the frequent service bus lines. And so we're looking for that opportunity to do even more. Another tool in the toolbox is business access and transit lanes called BAT lanes. And these are lanes which are primarily for transit but allow other vehicles to also use that lane in order to turn either to access local driveways, properties, or to make a right turn, for example, and then only transit is allowed to go through. So it's a preference for transit. Another tool is our pro-time peak period only transit lanes. We have an example of this in the photo here on Southeast Madison approaching the Hawthorne Bridge, where during the peak time up till 10 a.m., it is for buses only, but then in off-peak, it's on-street parking. And you can see that there, on some days, really, the bus can enjoy the benefit of passing the congestion. Another tool is the intersection queue jump, or right turn except bus, similar with the bat lane. And this would allow buses to also skirt around a traffic queue. Another family of tools are located at stations or stops, and just one tool I'll highlight is the bus stop consolidation, which means once you get on the bus, your trip can be quicker if it doesn't stop as often. And another family of tools we have is around operations, and the tool I'll highlight here is a transit signal priority, along with other signal improvements. And this allows a technology that is both located in our traffic signals, but also on the buses, and so a system that allows them to communicate and let the bus know, let the signal know that the bus or the train or streetcar is approaching, and to give them a green to clear out the queue or get through the light themselves. And so that's just give you a taste for what some of the treatments that we could apply to enhance transit. And wanted to then also highlight that we do see this as a partnership, and inspired in part by the 122nd Avenue partnership that Neil McFarland spoke to earlier, where we make capital investments. And in the instance of 122nd, it has mostly been about safety and access to transit, building sidewalks and crossings. But we see this as an opportunity to take it to another level, where we also focus on the transit performance itself and make improvements in our streets to help the bus and move along more efficiently. And so we're looking for how to grow this into a program and a list of projects. Just as an update on the 122nd Avenue partnership, we do have some projects that are in design and going to construction this year, and then also more coming in 2019. I'll talk about that more in a moment. Wanted to talk a little bit more about why. Why are we looking to do this? And fundamentally, it's because we think we need to do more to support transit in Portland. Buses are a workhorse of the transit system. In fact, some bus lines today are carrying as many transit riders as MAX and streetcar lines. So they're all up there together. The number four, which is fourth on this list, is already advancing as the Division Transit Project. And so there's some others up there that need some attention too. So, let's make those workhorses work better. Unfortunately, though, transit mode share within Portland has remained at about 12% since the year 2000. And our policy goals are, and our growth strategy really relies on a higher mode share, that more than 12% of Portlanders are taking transit. And we think that there's things that we can do to help improve that experience for the existing transit riders, so we keep them as transit riders and serve them well, but also that we can grow that ridership by making it more attractive.
Could you go back to that for a minute? So does this surprise you?
It was a little surprising, yes.
It surprises me a lot.
Yes.
Given that congestion over this time period has gotten much, much worse, and I would have expected just, based on the value of time, that you'd mm-hmm. see an increase in ridership, but it's effectively remained stable. Why do you think that is?
Wonderfully cued. I would clarify that the ridership has gone up as a number, a whole number. More people
but
are taking transit. But as a percentage,
it has not increased.
It's not.
But that's still surprising to me.
Yes, and we think it may in part be because buses are stuck in congestion, and they are also taking longer. And
okay, so your proposal of these enhanced zones then obviously gives the bus the transit priority, and so you think that will address that issue?
Help to address it, yes.
Help
we
to
do.
Address that issue.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I would say the one other piece actually soon coming to council is growing transit communities, another effort that April's been working on, and that is focused on investments surrounding transit corridors to make it easier to walk and bike to access those transit corridors. And so that's another piece of the puzzle, is making sure most transit riders start out as pedestrians. So if they don't have full and complete facilities to get them to the corridor, it really is pushes them away from being transit riders.
So I still have post-traumatic stress syndrome from the CRC conversation, but I remember lots of discussions about the time value of money or something like that. Was that, what was the term? All you transportation geeks, what was it? It was like the time value of money. Yeah. At some point, the value of your time is such that you will switch modes of transportation.
Yeah.
And so... You know, one of two things is happening. Either the transit doesn't provide you any advantage in terms of time, or alternatively, the cost to you as a consumer of the transit has gone up proportionally to whatever savings might be derived from that transit. So are we also talking about the fares here?
Well, in part, Neil spoke to the low-income fare piece of the puzzle, and so that's a key component. The other is making sure that we're balancing out the costs of your other options, and so the cost of parking, for instance, congestion pricing, all of those elements fit into this choice matrix that an individual traveler is trying to configure.
Okay, I'm just surprised by that statistic.
No, we are too. I mean, I think this is in part emboldened us to say we really need, as the city, not just as the transit agency, to take this issue very seriously and come up with an aggressive approach.
I could tell you why I don't take the bus. It's because I've been pushed so far out of the central city by rising rents. There's not enough time in my day to get here and get home before I run out of childcare hours. And I also have a son who uses a wheelchair, and I found the buses to be unreliable for wheelchair users. Unreliable mostly in that sometimes they're taken up by other wheelchair users. Sometimes they're taken up by other riders, such as in one instance, a gentleman pushing a car full of chihuahua or a stroller full of chihuahuas. And, you know, that was the second bus that we couldn't get on. So, and I know, you know, at least I live on the edge of Northeast Woodlawn, so there is a reliable bus route. But for people, especially that have been pushed out to East Portland, there's not enough service. Maybe they don't feel safe walking home because of these unsafe streets. So I don't think we can underestimate how the housing crisis is impacting congestion.
I agree, yes.
And also something we heard from our other partners around the region is just taking longer and longer to get through the region. You know, so this is impacts people. Portlanders who live further out, but also people who need to go from Gresham to Washington County, where many of the jobs are. So these are Portland projects, but I think there's a great regional benefit that TriMet and other agencies understand.
And, I mean, I know this is a tough one, but there's not a lot of park and ride options for people who live in the city. Like, I would probably be happy to do that, but...
To date, our strategy has been more to try to create those centers that have direct access to transit, so you can do it as a pedestrian or as a cyclist rather than needing to drive
first.
But indeed, I think we're trying to work on multiple fronts to address those pieces of those the issues and challenges you highlighted that are within our purview. So what can we do to make it safer to get to the bus or accessible?
We do love the Max and the Streetcar for wheelchair use.
I have heard this from others as well, yes. And what can we do to help replicate that kind of experience through buses? So I'll be looking for that. Level boarding can be, or near level, can help for that. Or the new 60-foot buses that TriMet will be using on the new Division Transit line would accommodate more space as well, potentially.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Update. So it's what I was struggling for was the value of travel time savings.
Ah, okay.
So something for everybody to go home and Google tonight, VTTS.
Okay.
I should figure that out. Yeah.
Thank you for walking out with us.
It's essentially what's embedded in each of our heads deciding what we're going
to
do.
I promise not to share any more today.
We're looking at performance measures later on the presentation, so you know this is one of the things we'll be looking at. How can we measure this delay and begin to trigger action? So.
Yeah, very
more
good.
To come. Yeah.
And along the lines of measures, this is one here on the screen that shows that the average speed of TriMet buses is declining over time, and it is taking longer for them to complete a line, and that means it's longer for the passengers too, and it's costing them more. $1 to $2 million a year just to maintain the same schedule because that schedule takes longer. We want to change that equation, if you will, and instead of it turned into service that people will notice and have that improved frequency.
Does that make sense in terms of having to add buses just to keep up the same service? So essentially the same bus that's working a loop, you need to add another bus just to have them come every 15 minutes because those buses are being delayed. So rather than being able to improve service from 15 minutes to 12 minutes, you're just keeping up based on that congestion delay.
This map displays congestion and the delay to transit throughout the frequent service lines and helps to show the geography of where buses are slowed down in, during peak congestion. It's measuring the difference between the free flow, off-peak, and then the peak. And so where the map is red, it's saying there's a greater difference between that free flow and congested time. And so it's experiencing more delay during the day in those red or orange locations. And this isn't just buses, right? This is people who are stuck on buses, people who are late getting to work, getting to school, getting to childcare, wherever they may be going. And so we want to turn that around. There's also an important equity consideration to this, and I appreciate for you starting to highlight that. That people who do need to live further out or further from their jobs, they have longer transit trips, and this delay is making it even longer. And at what point is it just not even a feasible option for them, either because it's too long of a trip or because they can't rely on the bus to get there if they're a shift worker? That is a much greater implication if you need to clock in or you could lose your job if you're not there on time. So we do think it is important that we are doing this period, but also focused on where it will provide the most benefit for those most vulnerable too. So getting more to the where. This map displays some of the various candidates that we were looking at and other projects that are in progress that would complement our efforts, so Southwest Corridor, Outer Division. They're not included in our initial study, but we did identify about 11 candidates of lines or pieces of lines for further study that really we saw as having the most need and potential for improvements now. And this is just a starting point. We do plan to develop an ongoing system that we would look at all transit lines. But for the purposes of this initial planning study, this is where we have been focusing our analysis. And we developed an initial methodology to evaluate these lines and segments of these lines. And our initial criteria include looking at ridership, reliability, which is that delay due to peak congestion, transit speed, where is the bus just slow all throughout the day, dwell time, that's time the doors open, it stops, and equity considerations focused on three primary communities where there's a high number of people of color, low income, or households with limited English proficiency. In addition, we looked at growth, where, based on the comprehensive plan growth scenario, there is forecasted increase in population and jobs. And the results of our analysis, along with this, more about those criteria, are on one of the handouts I gave you on enhanced transit. And on the back side, it has the results with all the scores for individual criteria.
as well as the total score map that I'm displaying here. And essentially, if it's red, that's the highest score total of all of our measures, where it indicates to us where it's most important to focus. And of course, the orange and yellow are also important. But we use this both as a way to start to develop our methodology and test and learn from a methodology so we can refine it, a little research and development, if you will. But it's also to help us start to identify projects and locations where we want to look at more closely. So it's helping inform the next phase of our planning process as well. And so that